I want to thank you all for having me today, the token plant pathologist in the group. I really appreciate it. I see we got two more talks on plant pathology coming up, and excited to hear those, but I appreciate the invitation. On behalf of Glenn and myself, State of Georgia, peanut production, if we can ever invite you, if you come through Georgia, you're interested in peanut production, we'd be happy to host you, happy to have your visit. I'm not trying to make peanut producers. I was going to ask the question, how many people here have ever been in a peanut field? And I see now that we got some in the back, and we got a graduate student here from North Carolina State. So there are several people in the audience who have worked with peanuts before. But while peanut production on a national scale is a minor crop at best, if you visit the state of Georgia, it becomes one of our most important crops. And so in order to talk to you about what I want to talk today, I have to give you some background information on peanuts. In my opinion, as far as my career goes, and Bob, you may argue what my successes have or have not been, but I would argue that this issue we're going to talk about today, prescription fungicides and peanut RX, has been probably one of my greatest accomplishments as far as what I take pride in. Peanuts in 2008 were grown on 690,000 acres in the state of Georgia. Our average yield was 3,400 pounds per acre. That's one of our top yields ever of historical importance. Our base price now in the current year is $355 a ton. Every ton of peanut that's got quality goes for $355 a ton unless you can get a contract. Most growers in the state of Georgia will argue that they cannot grow peanuts profitably as it is at $355 a ton. The average price that when you put contracts in is most growers in 2009 are getting somewhere around $380 a ton. Now, one thing to remember, when I started in 2000 at the University of Georgia, we were still under the old quota program for peanuts, and peanut growers were getting $610 a ton. Come jump ahead 10 years, and you're almost half of what it was at the time. Okay? We got newer varieties capable of producing 6,000 pounds per acre, so we are seeing improvements. Let's talk about diseases, and that's what the most important thing is, because diseases are a tremendous impact on the peanut crop. If you grow peanuts in the state of Georgia, you will have early leaf spot. I know this picture was taken in the Philippines. We get these same. This is late leaf spot. This is peanut rust. We get all of these diseases in Georgia. Foliar diseases are very, very important. If they're not controlled, they can lead to significant losses. All growers spend money for fungicides, except for some of our organic growers. We're spending in excess of $30 million a year trying to control this disease or this complex of diseases. White mold or southern stem rot are most important soil-borne disease. You can see that in areas where it's not controlled or not managed well, you can take your yield almost down to zero. And again, we have to control that as well. What about disease management in Georgia? Disease management in Georgia for the past 40 years has been fairly similar. We have a standard fungicide program where growers begin making fungicide applications approximately 30 days after planting. They begin to control for foliar diseases. The applications are made or historically been made every 14 days. The fungicides are applied between the period of 60 and 100 days after planting to control not only foliar diseases, but that stem rot and other soil-borne diseases I talked about. The fungicide program is the single greatest cost to our peanut producers. More important than seed cost, more important than insecticide or herbicide cost, controlling diseases is the number one issue that our growers face. Most growers historically would grow or would spray their peanut crop seven times during a season. 30 days after planting, every 2 weeks for a total of seven sprays. Okay. What's the rationale behind that 14-day calendar? Okay. Originally, when you looked at the 14-day calendar, which is when chlorothalonil and Bravo first came on the market, it was originally based upon residue studies and the belief that the protective window that chlorothalonil, that Bravo, and then some of the later fungicides could offer you was 14 days. And after 14 days, you need to reapply. If it was bad weather, you need to tighten your interval up a little bit. And the important thing about this rationale is that no matter what field situation you're in, when you're growing peanuts, that 14-day interval generally holds pretty well. Whether you've got good rotation or poor rotation, whether it's wet weather or bad weather, or good weather with minor adjustments, 14 days works pretty well. Okay? And finally, at the bottom in red is a very important key that as a graduate student I didn't understand, because we're going to talk about another system here in a second. Growers like to be able to schedule fungicide sprays. They like to say that on the 21st of July, I'm going to put a fungicide of pyraclostrobin on this crop, and then 2 weeks later, I'll come back. They don't like anticipating when the sprays go out. They like to have it on the calendar. And as a graduate student, and even as a young professional, I didn't put enough value on that factor in growers. So what are the issues? What are the issues with a 14-day program? Well, the first thing is that 14D program has really nothing to do with the biology of the pathosystem system. It has that protective window that we know we've probably got enough fungicide residue on that material for 14 days that we don't have to worry about the biology of the pathosystem system. Okay? The second thing is that the 14-day program has become increasingly expensive. First off, in 10 years, the value, the base value of the peanut crop has dropped almost by 50%. The second thing is a lot of our fungicides, especially if demand for fungicides goes up with soybean rust and spraying corn and whatever you want to talk about, our peanut farmers in Georgia who may not care about those issues will now pay more for their fungicide costs. Okay? And we've got the increased fuel cost and increase in labor. We've already talked about the fuel earlier today. And finally, the 14-day schedule does not take into consideration the improved resistance we have. We're growing better varieties in 2009 than we did in 1973, but we're still sticking to a 14-day schedule. And why? A, it works, and B, the chemical companies and the distributors have labeled their products that that's the way they should be used. Okay? The disease triangle. You know, I couldn't walk in here as a plant pathologist and not pull out the only thing we really know anything about. Okay? The disease triangle says if you want to have disease, you have to have a susceptible host, you have to have the pathogen, and you have to have the correct environment. Okay? And one of the things that plant pathologists have worked a lot on is disease advisories. North Carolina, the VC region, they use a lot of disease advisories for controlling foliar diseases and soil-borne diseases. In Georgia and in Alabama, we've tried to use something called AU, AU being Auburn University Peanut Leaf Spot Advisory. And basically, this peanut leaf spot advisory looks at the spread of infection leaf spot favored by rainfall over a 24-hour period of time and how long it's been since the last time you sprayed. You look at rainfall, you look at how long it's been since you sprayed, and you decide if you want to spray again. And here's just one test, okay? Non-treated, a 10-day schedule, a 14-day schedule, and this is AU peanut based upon weather conditions. This is the number of applications that were made, this is the amount of leaf spot, and this is the yields at the end of the season. So what you can see is this is basically our 14-day schedule. By using this leaf spot advisory, the grower cut their fungicide applications in half and maintained yields. Why wouldn't they want to do that? You know what? Do you know how many people in Georgia use AU peanut for control? I don't either. There's none. They don't use it, and I can show you data like that. Why don't they use it? All right, what are the disadvantages? The first thing is growers like the convenience of a schedule. They absolutely like that. The second thing is if you grow 1,000 acres of peanuts, now you all may grow 1 million acres of wheat in Kansas or corn in Kansas, but for us, 1,000 acres of peanuts is a lot to get over. And if you tell a grower he needs to spray 1,000 acres tomorrow because it triggered today, he can't do it, okay? So it's difficult for large growers to do that. And the last thing is the possible savings. We anticipate that in a wet year, the possible savings is 1 to 2 sprays. The grower says, I don't care. The headaches of using advisory doesn't matter to save 1 or 2 sprays, all right? So now you're thinking, what's this got to do with Peanut RX? Here's my title slide. That's the background. That's where we are. So the question now is, and this is the emerging issue, if growers are overspraying in some situations, they probably don't need to spray 7 times, and it's costing them money they may not need to spend, but they're not going to use a system that makes biological sense to me as a plant pathologist. Is there another alternative? Okay? And that alternative I want to talk to you about is a prescription fungicide program. We've labeled it, branded it Peanut RX to better manage fungal diseases. And though I'm here today talking to you about it, it's really been a tremendous collaborative effort between the University of Georgia, Auburn University, Jason Woodward now at Texas AgriLife, colleagues from Florida to put this system together. That's what I want to talk to you about for the remainder of my time, is taking the reality of disease necessity, disease management in a field in Georgia, in the Southeast, given the limitations of what we can do based upon what growers will accept. If growers won't accept it, I can get the publication, Bob. Or I should get the publication. I haven't yet, right? But I should. Okay? Then the question becomes, what does it really matter? Okay? Here's the question I ask growers when I present the concept to them in the first part. When it comes to peanut production, will all fields have the same disease problem? Now, if professionals in here, you know that's not true. You know they won't. But the growers, you have to start them off by asking them an easy question. They're going to say, well, of course they don't. I got fields that got a lot of disease pressure. I got fields that don't have any disease pressure. Okay? All right? So assuming that the answer is, no, they won't all have the same amount of disease. The question then comes, can we predict which fields will have more disease and which fields will have less? That's the question. Not will some have more and some have less. They will have. Can we predict and make an educated assumption on that? Case in point. You can't see it very well, but this is all early leaf spot. This is the same year, same day. These planting dates were within a week of each other. This is a field at the Blackshank Farm. This is a field a mile away. Severe defoliation prior to harvest. No defoliation in the untreated check. This is untreated. This is untreated. No defoliation. Okay. I used to think that this was a failure. If I went out into a field and I put a fungicide test out and I didn't get any difference between my untreated check and my best treatment, I was disappointed. It was a wasted trial. But there's a message there. The message is, if there's no difference, then obviously you didn't need the fungicide program that you worked so hard to put out there. Okay? So it's obvious that there's differences. Okay? So if we know there's differences in the fungicide in fields, and we know that not all fields need the same fungicide amount as other ones do, how can we make that, and this is what we're trying or we have developed, how can we take that observation? Not all fields need the same amount of disease control that others do. And when you lose less disease control or less management input, you save money. And when you save money, you make more money on the back end. Okay? So what are the steps we had to look at? One is we must have a system where we can reliably, to the grower's satisfaction, predict what's their risk. The second thing is that system must be flexible enough if conditions change. If three hurricanes come in a three-week period, we need to change. It's got to be flexible. Third step is we must have appropriate fungicides developed, fungicide programs that say if you're at high risk, you need this fungicide program. If you're at low risk, you can use this fungicide program. We have to have those developed, and most importantly for the growers, we have to have them validated. We can't just say, well, Joe, you need to spray four times, and your brother needs to spray seven times. They're not going to buy into that because they know fungicides have gotten Georgia where we are today, and that is excellent peanuts and excellent peanut yield. Okay. Last thing, our fourth step is we got to have cooperation. If we're trying to do it in Georgia, we better be doing it in Alabama as well. We better be doing it in Florida. If we're telling our extension agents about it, we better have consultants buying into it as well, not only the growers. Okay. And the last one is perhaps the most important. If we're going to try and modify how growers approach the use of fungicides in their crops, we better have some support from the industry. Because if we don't, if Bob stands up and tells a grower, you need to spray that crop three times, and that grower runs into some problem, and he goes to his Bayer salesman, or his Bayer chemical salesman, or Syngenta, what are they going to say? Well, Bob's a smart guy. He's got the answers. Go talk to Bob. Don't talk to us. So it's critically important. Why don't you think the industry would be jumping at the chance to help the grower save money? There's a cynical view. The cynical view is, well, every dollar they save is a dollar I don't make. Okay? But that's not the biggest reason. What's the biggest reason? The claims? That risk aversion. That's right. That's the, I didn't even think about it, but that is. That's one they bring up all the time. But they're getting more and more confidence in us. A big one's a distributor. Okay? If the distributors are handling your products and now you're telling the distributors, you know what? Bob says they can spray four times. We're going to back them on that. And the distributor says, I lose three sales. Company X is still talking seven sprays. We're going to carry their products. You know, it's the politics involved. Okay? So we needed, first of all, we needed that system. How can we predict risk? We had a great model that we've actually joined with, and that is the Tomato Spotted Wilt Risk Index, TSWV Index. Tomato spotted wilt virus in 1997, we estimated was leading to a 12% yield loss. It was the most important disease we had. This is a picture of a field. You can't see it real well. It was devastating. Our entire breeding effort for peanuts in the southeast went to improving disease resistance to spotted wilt. In 1996, the Georgia Green cultivar was released with increased resistance. In 1997, the Tomato Spotted Wilt Virus Index from University of Georgia, which looks at a number of factors, way to decrease the susceptibility of the crop. I know North Carolina State has come up with one for tomato spotted wilt virus as well. We have seen, with a combination of better varieties in this index, we've seen the importance of tomato spotted wilt virus plummet. Now, it's still out there, but as long as we manage it, we're able to manage it well. Okay, so we have the background. We have an example. All right, so now we're looking at how do we control or how do we better manage fungal diseases. And we look at production factors. We know that planting date can have an effect on diseases. Tillage, cultivar selection is a huge one. Crop rotation is huge. Irrigation, row pattern, seeding rate, we know that all of these factors can have an impact on your leaf spot disease, your stem rot disease, your rhizoctonia limb rot disease. The question is, can we build all of those into a system where we can give a grower risk? In April, when they're getting ready to plant peanuts, they can already know what their potential risk is. And more importantly, once they know that risk, can we help them use that to develop what the fungicide program is going to be? 1997, cooperation with Florida and with Auburn, we came up with the spotted wilt risk index. In 2003, kind of by ourselves, we came up with the fungal disease risk index. Once that was proven to the group as a whole, we merged the two to the UGA peanut disease risk index in 2005 with Florida and with Auburn. We began education on prescription fungicide programs. What's a prescription fungicide program? A seven-spray program says, when it's 14 days, go out and spray. A prescription fungicide program says, put the right amount of fungicide you need in the environment to maximize your profit. 2007, we launched Peanut RX. We branded it as Peanut RX, a peanut prescription. Basically, it's this index now branded. We've got UGA, University of Florida, Auburn, Mississippi State, and Syngenta at that time. Syngenta said, we want to be a part of this. And so as early as 2007, Syngenta was saying, and I'll pass out, or there's some of their cards up here, they say, we believe you, you can spray less with a prescription program. Okay. How does the index portion of Peanut RX work? All right. Here's the factors in the field, all from rotation at a plant stand, that we know have some effect on spotted wilt, some effect on leaf spot, some effect on white mold, some effect on limb rot. And these are the maximum number of points in any category. And these are based upon experience. These are our experience talking to us, based upon all the agronomists, all the plant pathologists involved, all the entomologists involved. The higher number of points, 50 points in the spotted wilt index means that it has, we believe it has, approximately almost twice as much important on the spread of that disease, the impact of that disease, as planting date does. Or it does, it has twice the importance of plant stand. The larger the point value, the greater the impact that factor has. And you can see that variety for all diseases with our resistance is number one. You can see that crop rotation for our fungal diseases is of second importance. So we give a magnitude to the points for each of those production practices. Then we add up, when they add up all the categories, or all the categories within a disease, we break it into a low-risk situation, a medium-risk situation, a high-risk situation. Again, this is based upon experience. Total up the number of points based upon your production system, and you come up with whether you're low-risk, moderate-risk, or high-risk. Okay. What are the benefits of having something like this? The first thing is the growers get re-education. And we were talking about education earlier about glyphosate resistance. The growers get education on how crop rotation, how variety selection, how planting day can all affect diseases in the field. But more important than that, they already know that. They know a more resistant disease, a more resistant cultivars better than a less resistant. What this does is allows them to quantify the benefit. What's the benefit of choosing a Georgia O2C variety over Georgia Green when I really want to plant Georgia Green if I adjust other production factors as well? Okay, so it allows them to put a quantification on what the impact of each of those is. It allows them to improve the situation in each field if they choose to, and we do this at the beginning of the season. Last thing is the risk will allow future decisions about fungicide programs. All right? Here's a variety. It's a little bit complicated, but here's some of the common varieties or some of the varieties grown in Georgia, peanut varieties. This is the points with tomato spotted wilt virus. You can see we go for the TIFGAR with 10, a ViroGuard with 30. That means that TIFGAR, we believe, has three times the resistance, or ViroGuard is three times as susceptible to spotted wilt as TIFGAR is. When you look at white mold, Georgia O1R is 15 points versus 30 points for NCV11. We believe it has twice the resistance. You can see how it is. So when a grower is picking out varieties, they can look at maturity date, they can look at whether it's high oleic or low oleic chemistry as well, and then they can put a quantification on what the disease resistance is. Just an example of planting dates. All right? We know that planting date has a tremendous impact on your risk to tomato spotted wilt virus. Earlier planting, higher risk. Three times as much risk planting before May 1st as there is planting in early June. We also know that your white mold risk is higher earlier in the season as opposed to later in the season. Now, you all don't want me to tell you why that is, but you can trust me that it is true. Okay? So when growers are picking out these factors, they look at the disease risk, they can look and see what they want to do as far as planting date. Last one's plant population. We know that the plant population has a tremendous impact on spotted wilt. it can also affect things like stem rot as well. The more plants per foot you have, the higher your risk is. Right? Are you going to go home and remember that 5 points, Bob said 5 points for stem rot with the plant population greater than 4 plants per foot a row? No. That's not important that you remember the exact thing. But you remember the system we're developing based upon our experience of the factors that affect disease and how these relate to each other. What's the importance of plant population versus planting date versus cultivar selection? We come up with an index which quantifies the grower's risk in a field. That was the first step. Okay. Here's an example. I've got the factors on the left-hand column. The next column is just the factors that a typical grower might use, the rotation, the variety, whether they use what insecticide they use, planting date. The grower uses a workbook like this, puts the points in, and comes up with his risk to spotted wilt's very high. Moderate is orange, so he's moderate risk to these other diseases as well. Simply by changing some of those factors and changing rotation, some of the other factors as well, he can go to low for spotted wilt, he can go to low for white mold, still maintain some risk to at least spotted limb rot. Okay? This exercise allows the grower to try and determine what their risk will be during the season. Okay. So the crux of the problem now is we've got a system, which you can trust me if you want to, we now have a system where they can assess the risk to important diseases in their field. And if that's where we left it, that's an educational tool, and hopefully they can minimize disease by making the necessary production changes. But most importantly is, can they change their fungicide programs? Can they take a prescription fungicide program where we modify it to fit the disease risk in specific fields? We want to ensure adequate fungicide programs. We want to maintain disease control. We want to maintain yields, but we want to maximize profits by reducing costs involved in production. Okay? The endorsement of the Peanut RX fungicide program and prescription programs. Syngenta in 2007, Nichino in 2008, BASF and Arysta Life Science in 2009, Bear Crop Science, hopefully in 2010. And these are companies that 5 years ago were insisting growers spray 7 times. Why would they go to this? Why would industry, am I that good a salesman, Bob? I'm glad you're here. I could just pick on you and my audience, right? I don't have to pick on Glenn, all right? Why would they do that? Syngenta did it for 2 reasons. The first thing is Syngenta wants to be perceived as a steward to the growers' needs. They believe that as long as growers are in business, they'll be in business. The second thing is Syngenta wanted to be first in stepping forward with this. Okay, they wanted to be perceived as the leader in fungicide programs. Now, why did Nichino, BASF, Arysta, and now Bear Crop Science, why did they get into it? Because Syngenta got into it. It's amazing. You get a big company to send out slick flyers that are in every dealership. Guess what? Guys go back and say, why aren't we doing it? Okay? All right, so let's come up with the prescription fungicide programs. Whether they're endorsed by a company or not, we can show growers how to have reduced input programs. The top is a 7-spray program. That's a traditional spray. This is basically our low-risk fields or moderate-risk fields or high-risk fields. If you put a date to that, which is what the growers want to do, this is where we go out there and spray. Okay? And what's the benefit of this? The benefit is that, A, we are trying to come up with fewer sprays in lower risk situations. But what's the second benefit? Growers don't want just that. They want to be able to put that on the calendar. And so with this system now, we can say if you're a low risk field, 45, 66, 87, 108 days after planting, that's when you need to spray. Okay? And this is what the prescription fungicide programs are. Okay. What's the risk? What's the risk?
It fails.
And that's a serious risk, especially if you are a chemical salesman. Okay? That's their biggest concern if you're in the field is, well, Bob Kimmerite says you can spray 4 times, but they're going to be calling me. Right? What growers have to, I tell the growers this. If as a grower, all you want to do is spray your field and walk away from it, like our growers treat soybeans, okay, then you need to be spraying every 14 days. If you're not willing to put the footprints in the field, you need to spray every 14. But if you're a grower, because I don't care what they do, but if you're a grower who wants to find a way to economically grow peanuts when times are tight, money's tight, then you can use this. But you have to watch the weather. And I'm not talking about just rain showers. But if the season changes, if we had the weather they've had in Mississippi and Louisiana lately and Arkansas, common sense says We thought we would spray four times at the beginning of the season, but we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to spray five or six times. So you have to watch. You have to make adjustments in periods of strange weather. Okay. What's the key to the success? First thing is, if a grower is not going to use the Peanut RX Risk Index, that's on the back of the cards, the Syngenta, and all the others put out, then don't spray anything less than seven or eight times. Don't try to cut your sprays down. So you have to use the index. Second thing is, you got to make every fungicide application count. Use good fungicides when you do spray. Okay? You got to be willing to scout the fields for disease, and if weather becomes unfavorable, you need to change. All right? And I'm not talking about a rain shower every now and then. I'm talking about severely change. Okay? I went to a meeting with our best peanut growers in the state of Georgia, the highest yielding. I won't mention his name right now, Bob, but he's an influential cotton grower from Calhoun County. And I said, Mr., you know him well, Mr., if we could recommend reduced fungicide programs for your lower risk fields, would you be willing to try them? You know, this is the guy, he's proactive. He's the guy we need to get on our team. Guess what he said? He said he wants his neighbor to try them. Exactly what he told me in a group of all these people I'm trying to convince. He said, let my neighbor try them, and you come back in a few years, and if he's still happy with them, then I'll try them. Okay? Well, our neighbors, and that makes perfect sense. They've gotten where they are by the fungicide programs they've used. How do we get growers beyond saying, I'm afraid to come off that? Right? We've done a number of fungicide trials. I'm only going to labor you with a few of them here. Okay? First one's in Appling County. This is a fairly new, this county only started growing peanuts when the quota system went away. Okay? They had no quota in that county. And when the quota system went away, they were able to grow peanuts at $3.55 a ton unless they got a good contract. We have three programs, non-treated, where the fungicide program costs us nothing. We have a reduced fungicide program, one we came up with, where they sprayed three times, and you can see the cost per acre. And then we have the full season program. Okay? So what we have is these crops being sprayed, these fields being sprayed three times. If you look at this, the red is the seven spray program. The gray is the five spray program, and the white's where we didn't spray at all. Okay? Our prescription three spray program didn't work, did it? It's not as good. Okay? Well, at least from disease management, not quite as good. What do? You want to give the talk? You want to come up here? You want to? You've seen it before, maybe. Anyway, you're right. You come up here, and let's look at white mold or stem rot. Okay? And you can see, again, as far as disease management, we're much better than not treating at all, but we're not quite as good. And when you look at yields, Bob, who won? Did we fail?
We look pretty good.
We're not quite as good.
We look pretty good.
Yeah, because when you put in the cost per acre, where'd you make your money? Okay? We don't have to be, a grower does not have to maintain exactly the same yields or the same disease control if your bottom line is profit. But what's grower perception? When you go out into a field. If a peanut grower goes in the field and sees spots at the end of the year, what happened? He failed. Called a fungicide rep. Why didn't your fungicide work well? Disease is not something we want, but if you want to make the most profit, having a little bit of disease may not be a bad thing. Okay? A few more examples. This is the Lang Farm. Okay? The green stands for low risk for these diseases. Those are the points at the top. Red stands for high risk. They were high risk for leaf spot, white mold, and limb rot, based upon the rotation. I'm just about done. If you look at your low risk, your moderate risk, and your high risk, you'll see really no difference in disease control where we use sprayed four times versus seven times. When you look at the different colors, different fungicide programs, but again, when you look at the low risk four sprays versus seven sprays, not much difference. And when you look at yields, I don't have the value in this situation. Spraying fewer times was better. Okay? And this is a great example because this is very conservative. Or this is really taken out. These are high-risk fields that we still got the results we wanted to, low-risk fields. Okay? Jason Woodward did his dissertation on a component of this. Everywhere where you see a blue bar taller than a yellow bar, that's where spraying fewer times made more money. That's the bottom line. And only one example, and that's all the way over four from the right, have we ever had a difference in yield where it went against us. Heavy pressure with a fungicide losing effectiveness was a bad combination. Okay. Last couple slides. Syngenta came out with this in 2007. These are fungicide programs that they will now stand behind. If you use our index, and come up and find out what your risk is. If you can document the risk was that and you use their fungicide program and you have a problem in the field, they will stand behind that four-spray program just like they would a seven-spray program. But if you use a four-spray program and can't show them this risk card, you know what? They don't stand behind that. Okay? If you jump ahead to 2009, we got Syngenta, we've got Nichino, we got Arista Life Science, we got BASF, all four companies saying we're going to let you spray less if you can document it. And in 2010, the company that dragged its heels the longest, the greatest concern, Bayer Crop Science. And I would like to say it's me talking to them. I would rather, the truth is, it's other companies jumping into it. Okay. Final comments. How do we make it successful? We've got cooperation from four land-grant universities. We now have cooperation from five of the major chemical sales companies in the Southeast. We got USDA involved saying spraying less on resistant varieties is a good thing. Our top peanut producer in 2008 made 6,000 pounds per acre. He grew more peanuts, they grew more peanuts than anybody else in the state per acre. And they sprayed their crop four times. Okay? The growers listen to that. They may not listen to me, but they listen to that. Even peanut breeders are talking about it. Okay? So, in conclusion, and I hope I didn't go over too long, this has been a tremendous advantage for us. It gives us an opportunity to take what growers can do and find a way around what they are willing to do, what they won't do, and still find a benefit for them. And the key to success has been a cooperative effort with industry, with our neighbors in cooperative extension and research in neighboring states, and with those in our own state. Okay? And just extend the invitation from Glenn and myself as well. If you come to Georgia and want to see peanuts, we'd be happy to have you. All right? Thanks.